What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
We hope you are enjoying our expanded podcast schedule. For the month of July, we have something new for our members. Each month, members who successfully answer our bonus content quiz will be entered for a chance to win a pair of AirPods Pro. To participate, you must have access to the bonus sections of the podcasts. Members also receive an ad-free listening experience, an evening newsletter, an invitation to join the DSR Slack community, and more. Best of all, if you become a member in the month of July, you'll receive 50% off the normal membership price. Visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy and enter code FIREWORKS at checkout. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy and code FIREWORKS. Thank you for your support.
Nine, 12, 10, 28, 2, 23.
This is Deep State Radio, coming to you direct from our super secret studio in the third sub-basement of the Ministry of Snark in Washington, D.C., and from other undisclosed locations across America and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, David Rothkopf, coming to you today from Washington, D.C. We're going to talk today about the recent developments and ongoing developments in Israel and their impact here in the United States. We've got two guests and friends who are excellently well positioned to discuss that, one of them being Alon Pincus, who is a former Israeli diplomat, high government official, columnist for Haaretz, who is in Israel at the moment. How are you doing today, Alon?
90% humidity, 95 degrees, a coup d'etat, and I'm moving an apartment. And the Yankees lost. Couldn't be better.
It sounds just great. Well, maybe we'll have better luck with the mood of our other guest, Emily Tamkin, who is an author, an independent journalist who has been writing for a long time about issues that pertain to American Jews in politics, American Jews like George Soros and the role he plays in politics. Are you doing better than Alon is today, Emily?
I think so. I think I've been shamed into not complaining. Thanks for having me today.
I'm not complaining, by the way. I'm not complaining, guys. You just asked, so I answered.
We're just stating facts, yeah.
I'm as jovial and happy as anyone in a revolution could be.
Well, why don't you start us there? Alon, everybody was covering the run-up to the vote on the first of the measures that Netanyahu and his coalition have posed to reduce the power of the Supreme Court, to give the prime minister and his cabinet a little bit more latitude there. Despite admonitions from the President of the United States and world leaders everywhere that making a big change to your democracy probably should not be done on a strictly party line basis with the slimmest of majorities, Netanyahu and company went ahead. It seemed pretty cataclysmic. Seems like more bad news is on the horizon. Protests, which have been going on in Israel for essentially all of this year and before, seem to continue. What's the state of play right now?
Well, the state of play essentially is as follows. The amendment to the law on the basic law judiciary, or basic law adjudication, if you want to get semantic about it, was passed. That amendment basically nullifies a clause called reasonableness, meaning that the Supreme Court had in its powers the ability to strike down a government decision or a government appointment on grounds that it was unreasonable. It is not exactly It does not exactly fall under judicial review, but it is part of, in general constitutional legal terms, it is part of judicial review. That, I know you're right, David, it's cataclysmic in terms of how people reacted to it. But to be honest, that was to be expected. I mean, there was talk and some people were flirting with the idea that there will be a compromise. Personally, I was against any compromise because it's a rotten compromise. It is a flawed compromise. It is not a real compromise. And the other side, led by Mr. Netanyahu, cannot be trusted to compromise on anything. But that's me. But people had flirted or entertained the concept. And then when it came, it struck them because people do realize that this is a first step en route to an empty democracy, a hollow democracy, a backsliding democracy, a severely weakened checks and balances situation. Now, where do we stand here? Where do we stand now? The Knesset, the Israeli parliament, is going into recess for the summer, essentially until the fall holidays, what you call in America the high holidays, New Year's, Rosh Hashanah, and Yom Kippur. Until then, not much is going to happen. Even the protest, which will go on for a few more weeks, and it is now in the process of changing its emphasis and changing its objectives, and there is thinking that perhaps the time is up, and it is now a moment of a point of inflection in which the protest should go to bring down the government. How will this be accomplished? I don't know. But this is where we are today, with half of Israel, more than half of Israel, in fact, closer to 60%, dismayed, livid, frustrated, and honestly very worried. And the other side is, on the one hand, gloating, but on the other hand, is also fearful of what the political landscape is going to look like in a few months. Because if you look at the polls, and this is my last sentence here, if you look at the polls, Netanyahu is doing miserably. I mean, the economy is down. The indicators are down. Relations with the U.S. are at an all-time low, at least since the early 1970s. You wrote about that very astutely, David, if I may say so, as did others on the same topic. And he's doing miserably in the polls. If an election were held today, from the 64 out of 120 seats that he has now, he is down to 52 in one poll, 53 in another poll. I mean, the coalition, not just him and his party. So right now, it's sort of, David, it's not a hiatus yet. I think there's a reorganization, a recalibration, revisiting of what should we do next on both sides. But there's no question about it. This is not Gettysburg, but this is as close as we have come to an open civil Cold War, at least since the year of the Lord 70.
Well, that you were in high school then, but I don't remember it personally. Emily, a central portion of Israeli politics has always been the relationship with American politics, American Jewish politics. It's always been based on the idea of closely shared values. That is now in question. You've written about it. How do you think this affects that relationship? Not the government-to-government one, but the people-to-people one.
Yeah, I mean, I think, okay, so if we look at the subset of American Jews who are still paying close attention to Israel and who care deeply about it and who are engaged on this issue, you have a subset of that subset, that is not upset by this, right? Because they're more conservative, they think it's fine. Or alternatively, they continue to say, it's Israel, we're going to defend it no matter what. But I think more American Jews who are engaged on these issues tend to be liberal. And this has been a very challenging, painful period for them, a very challenging, painful year for them, because long-held beliefs are being challenged. Now, there are those on the left who say, okay, well, the issue is that you're questioning this now, right? And you weren't questioning it before with the occupation or, you know, vis-a-vis Palestinians. So why are the judicial reforms the things that have gotten you all upset? Even with decades of those values, those liberal democratic values degrading, for a long time, American Jews, liberal American Jews have told themselves, yes, but the Israel in my head and the Israel in my heart is still, it's still there. It's still a possibility. It's still worth defending. I think that's really been thrown into question for a lot of people this year. Two other things I would say are, one, there have been some, especially establishment American Jewish groups, and you saw this from the Biden administration as well, say, well, the fact that people are vigorously protesting, that shows that it's still a democracy and the democracy is still alive. I do not mean this to sound disrespectful toward the people protesting, but the mere fact of a protest does not mean that you still have a democracy. You know, people, when Russia invaded Ukraine, there were very brave Russians who came out on the street to protest the war. That did not mean it was a democracy. When women in Iran come out on the street to protest, that does not mean it's a democracy. When Hungarians protested the closure of Central European University, that did not mean that they were in a full-fledged democracy. So we should be careful not to sort of conflate these two things. The other thing that I would say is that there was, it was the American Jewish Committee, or the Conference of Presidents. There was an establishment legacy Jewish group that put out a statement saying that they were afraid that this decision to go ahead with this portion of the judicial reform, that would really hurt relations with the diaspora. I think it is worth asking whether this particular government cares. When you have a diaspora minister who comes to the United States and gives the middle finger to pro-democracy, pro-Israel protesters in New York City, which he did, and who says, you know, who speaks about Reform Judaism, which is the largest denomination here in the United States, as he does, who has said that he thinks that pro-democracy protesters are more damaging than BDS, when you have a diaspora minister who a government that has repeatedly told American Jews and Jews around the world to butt out, I think it would perhaps be worthwhile for these groups to ask themselves, are they defending people who care about their opinion? I would suggest the answer is no.
So, Alon, you know, clearly something traumatic has happened here within Israel. Something traumatic has happened in the relationship. And the big question is, going forward, can Israel recover? Can the relationship recover? How quickly, and what does that leave you? You know, it's like somebody has a heart attack. They may get back up on their feet, but there may be significant scar tissue in their heart. They may never be the same again.
Right.
And listening to what Emily is saying, what is your prognosis?
Okay. I'll start with by saying, and I mean that from the bottom of my heart, that I subscribe to every single word that Emily said. So you're not going to find any daylight here, at least not on this. Now, moving to your question. Well, look, there are two things here. There are structural cracks in the relationship that have little to do with what's been going on in Israel in the last 7 months. And then there's the last 7 months, which obviously widened the cracks, or even, you know, put TNT or C4 explosive in them. And what do I mean by that? Two levels of analysis here. You know, the Israeli-American relationship on a diplomatic / strategic level, and the Israel-American Jewish or Israel-American Jewry U.S. triangle. These are not necessarily identical equations here. Now, what do I mean by that? The U.S.'s relationship with Israel has seen systemic changes that Israel, unfortunately, ignored for a long time. The U.S. has disengaged from the Middle East, even though it's not an overnight thing, and you still see American presence. But the U.S., in terms of grand strategy, disengaged from the Middle East. The U.S. is not dependent on Arab oil. There is no Soviet Union to contain, which was the cornerstone of American policy here in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and into and until the disintegration of the Soviet Union. And the U.S. Has been scarred and hemorrhaged too much in Middle East wars. And by Middle East here, I mean the grand Middle East, from Afghanistan in the east through Iraq, Syria, Yemen, what have you. And so there is an American disassociation, disengaging from the Middle East. That, of course, is all under a reprioritization process that sees America move into the Indo-Pacific and sees China as the main challenge. And Israel in this context is of much lesser importance. That we have been telling ourselves, and that American Jews have made it into bumper stickers, that we are one, that Israel is a strategic asset, that the U.S. can't live without Israel, that Israel contributes to American security, that's great. That's good for fundraisers. That's good for bumper stickers. That's good for, battle cries. That needs serious revisiting, because the U.S. is, I think you've written about that, David. Biden is probably the last Democrat of the old school that has a visceral, emotional commitment and appreciation. I don't want to say the word love, but let's say it anyway, love for Israel. And American demographics and electoral coalitions are not necessarily moving in Israel's favor. And Israel has been not just slow to react, but oblivious and indifferent to this because of Mr. Netanyahu. Enter the second level, the last 7 months. In the last 7 months, Israel distanced itself from the shared value, the core, the foundation of the relationship, which was always shared values and never strategic cooperation. The term strategic asset, and I've researched this extensively. I'm not the best researcher on this, and I'm not the only, but I've researched this. The term strategic asset was used by Israel, not by the U.S. The U.S. was willing to go by, which is why you raised an issue. Is this special? You, David, and your last column raised the issue of, is this special relationship still going on under these political circumstances with Mr. Netanyahu? And this is the last 7 months. He's been moving Israel away from that concept of shared values. He will claim, by the way, if you were in this discussion, he would say, no. I don't share values with Joe Biden. I do share values with Donald Trump, which, by the way, Americans should understand. Look at Netanyahu now and start imagining a second Trump term. This is what you're going to get. This is a 6th of January every day for 7 months running. And you see that America is uncomfortable with this. Now you add, this is my last take on this. Now you add American Jews, what Emily talked about. You know, I feel for them. I understand the frustration. They have suppressed their opinion for many years. Women praying in the Kotel, Reform Jews, conversion, who's a Jew, who's a rabbi, the chief rabbinate, and Israel not giving a damn about them. They all took it in. They all shut up. They all suppressed this. They all lived in denial because we are one, and Israel, good or bad, Israel right or wrong. Emily alluded to that. They're done with that. Now, I feel for them because it takes time to change a paradigm. I'm asking your aunt in Boca, David, or Emily, I'm asking her to change a paradigm, to change her mindset, to think of Israel differently from the brochure she's holding for 5 decades. It's very, very difficult. And what I see that's most worrying is not an anti-Israel or a critical of Israel approach, but a disassociation. I see this aloofness. I could see this, it's paralysis. If you take the judicial overall, the judicial revolution, this regime changing Netanyahu policy began on the 4th of January. Let's say we're on the 4th of August now, the next week. This is exactly seven months. In the last 7 months, American Jews, by and large, have kept quiet. Maybe it's paralysis, maybe it's disappointment, maybe it's resentment. I don't know. Emily is probably better. Both of you, in fact, are probably better positioned than I am to say. But the fact is, we don't see allies. I mean, yeah, you have groups. You have the Reform Movement and Rick Jacobs spoke, and you have J Street, and you have the AJC coming out with that statement that Emily spoke about. And you have Jerry Nadler putting out a statement. Okay, that's fine. But en masse, you do not see American Jewry take a stand on this.
Emily, you touched upon this earlier. There are a number of things that have changed here. One thing that has changed is the specifics of the political stance of the Netanyahu administration on this recent set of issues. But there are a lot of bigger changes afoot. There's generational change that has taken place. The aunt in Boca that Alon refers to, there's a generation that Israel was a special ally. It was a Cold War memory. It had to do with the Six-Day War, turning the desert green, the David against the Goliath that was surrounding it, right? I was pointed out that when Obama became president, he became president in the 80s. The Israel he remembered was the Ariel Sharon Israel that went into the camps in Lebanon and was a regional bully. He never looked at it in the way that prior generation did. There, of course, is a Gen X and Gen Z generation that doesn't remember the Cold War, that doesn't remember the benefits of the Cold War, that doesn't prioritize these issues, that sees U.S. involvement in the Middle East as generally much more of a problem than a solution to anything, and who just doesn't connect. And they're obviously the growing group. They are much more influential. They vote more in election after election. I've sensed, sorry for the long question, but I've sensed this kind of desperation on the part of the traditional advocates for Israel as they've watched all this drift away to try what tactics that I consider to be out-of-court tactics, like if you criticize the Israeli government, that's tantamount to being anti-Semitic, which is just ludicrous in my view, right? Or to turn on anybody who criticizes in a really harsh way. When does this translate into a significantly different policy, do you think? When does this get traction?
It's already changed for the Democratic voter, right? It already is changing for the Democratic voter. As you say, if you're a millennial and you're a Gen Z, if you're a millennial or Gen Z and you're an American Jew, you have grown up basically only seeing the situation between Israelis and Palestinians get worse. You have more access to different kinds of information than your parents did. As you say, you're farther away from historical moments that you have a different emotional connection to the country. I don't mean to sound disrespectful. I do not think Israel's boosters have done themselves a great service by saying, oh, it's just that they feel pressured on campus, or oh, it's just that it's not cool to be pro-Israel, or oh, it's just the media. And if you only spent more time in Israel, or if you only connected more, or oh, it's your intermarriage, or oh, it's this, oh, it's that, or, you know, we shouldn't even talk about this because if you do, you're an anti-Semite. I do not think that that has helped the cause, because you're shutting down a conversation rather than engaging with it. When has that ever convinced anybody of anything? So for American Jewish voters, and I should say that not just for American Jewish voters, but for millennial Gen Z voters you know, progressive, democratic, liberal voters more generally, Palestinian Americans are also becoming more involved in American politics and have a very different perspective and are able to share that. And I think we're seeing that reflected in politics as well. When does that change into policy? I think that will take longer. You know, I think even with Biden's obvious displeasure with this move, you know, Herzog was still at the White House. He and Netanyahu will still in all likelihood meet in the United States at some point between now and the end of the year. But I don't think this is sustainable for Democratic politicians. So if it's 5 years, if it's 10 years, you know, I'm not sure. Never say never. I have trouble seeing right now how it goes back to being a bipartisan, you know, no questions asked policy to support Israel in such a way as to mean not question it as it was in decades past.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you and you know, that may have to do with my own political biases, but I also, you know, I have two daughters who are in their early 30s whose grandfather was a Holocaust survivor, who ought to be natural supporters, both of whom, you know, married Jewish guys and live in Brooklyn. You know, you see a certain prototype there, who I think from their earliest days have been super sympathetic to the Palestinian cause, super sympathetic to, you know, one set of values applying to everybody, and super skeptical of what they saw as the government of Israel for the past couple of decades. And I get the sense that the momentum is with that group. I want to come back and talk about that, but this is where we take a break and we say to folks who are not members of the DSR Network that you should be a member. You go to the DSR Network, you click on membership, you put $5 a month down, you help support what we're doing, all this programming that we're doing, and you get to listen to all the bonus content, which is about a third of every episode, which is a lot. A lot of good stuff happens in there, as will happen here in moments. So go become a member and you can listen to it. If you are a member, stand by. We'll be right back.